The Google Podcast app is going away in April. Right now, I want you to take a look at the podcast app you're using right now. Maybe it's time for a new one. Check out podcastapps.com and try a new one for free right now. That's podcastapps.com.
Hi, friends. It's Carrie Dahl. Thank you so much for venturing into the inner circle with me. If you subscribe to my podcast and have been listening for a while, thank you. I appreciate you. If you're new, welcome to my circle, where the power of story is honored and I believe all voices need and deserve to be heard. As a former news anchor turned podcast host and public speaking coach, I know that stories are the most powerful way we connect as human beings. I feel privileged so many of you trust me with your stories, whether in my private Inner Circle Facebook group or right here on my podcast. Your story is your gift. Thank you for allowing me to share it with the world. Your intuition is a powerful tool, actually. It might be one of the most powerful tools we have at our disposal. I can honestly say that I have made some of my most challenging decisions and best decisions of my life simply by listening to my gut and then trusting it. That's the hard part, listening to it and trusting it. Can any of you who are listening right now relate? I will say that my gut has never led me in the wrong direction. I have a feeling that my guest today agrees. She takes the saying, a mother's intuition, to a whole new level. She trusted her gut when it was telling her things she hoped and prayed weren't true. But she would stop at nothing to find answers for herself, for her son, and for her family. Today's story, friends, is one of love. It's one of cancer, sacrifice, heartbreak, believing in yourself, and yes, trusting your intuition. This is a story I felt passionately about sharing with you because it will inspire you and empower you in countless ways. And with that, it is my pleasure to welcome Rebecca Litke, mom of three, student extraordinaire, wife, and the list goes on and on and on to the inner circle. It's so nice to have you as a guest here.
Thank you so much for having me on, Carrie. I really appreciate it.
I'm going to begin by getting you to answer the question that I asked in my introduction. Do you believe that trusting your intuition is one of the most powerful things we can do?
I do. I absolutely believe that. That trusting of my intuition has led me through many things in my life. Mm-hmm. But most recently, our son was diagnosed with cancer about 2 years ago. And I'll kind of tell you the story of him and what led to that diagnosis and how I trusted my gut along the way. Mm-hmm. And I followed what was right in my heart. So before my son turned two, he was displaying symptoms that, you know, a parent would deem as normal. He was having, you know, a little bit of trouble sleeping. He would cry at nighttime quite a bit. He was having a bit of irregular bowel movements, nothing too concerning. But for me, I knew that something was a little bit off. So following again, my gut, I went and saw his pediatrician, and his pediatrician just told me that he probably was just having a sleep regression or he was having an allergy to a food. And although I should have been okay with those answers, I was not okay with it. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of time went on and I found a little bump on the side of Levi's head. Now, this bump was quite small to begin with, and I felt it. It felt really hard. I knew that he hadn't bumped his head. So I was starting to think, you know, maybe these symptoms that he had were linked to this bump. So I took him into the emergency department.
Rebecca, hit pause for 1 second. I'm going to interrupt you. Like all yes. of the symptoms you're talking about, and even if I have my mom hat on, like they could be a sign of, with the exception of the bumps, like maybe he had the flu or maybe he was getting a cold, but it was it your gut that kept saying there's something not right, because that's huge there, because there's so many parents that would just pass it off and say, he's fine.
Exactly. And I think because of the background that I do have, the education that I do have in physiology, I could tell that the consistency within the symptoms and the longevity of his symptoms were not adding up. Because usually when your child has a cold or the flu or whatever it is, you know, it usually lasts a week or two and then it subsides. But for him, it was weeks on end and it was getting worse. And it was actually quite disturbing because he from being a really good sleeper, you know, sleeping throughout the night, he would be screaming all night. And so we didn't know what was going on. And so when I heard that from the pediatrician, the two just didn't line up. I wasn't okay with that answer. And
you went to the pediatrician, but before we get to the pediatrician, tell me about your background in physiology so everybody understands.
Yes. So I have a degree in clinical exercise physiology. I've worked in rehabilitation for many years, working with brain injured patients. I also had my own business and I'm currently going to school again, doing another undergraduate degree in science with a major in bio and a minor in psychology with the goal of applying to med school. Well, it was supposed to be this year, but next year I will be applying.
And we're going to dig into the why behind that later, but let's go back to your story. You said you knew something wasn't right and you took him to emergency. What did the doctor there say?
Yes. So the doctor looked at me like I was a little bit crazy for bringing my son in after what she said, he bumped his head. She thought it was just a little goose egg and that he tripped or something and that it would go away. And I explained to her the symptoms that he was having in the summer weeks prior. And she just looked at me like I was nuts. And so again, I left that place not okay with that answer. I knew that the symptoms he was having was linked to this bump on his head. And I knew this bump had to be a tumor because the way it looked, it was hard. It looked vascular and it looked like it was growing. And so I knew in my gut that it was a tumor. I just had to prove it somehow. So that was two medical professionals that I went to that turned me away. And you know what? I think we put medical professionals on a pedestal, but they're just people too. And they have their experiences and their medical knowledge and they do their best. But for me, I knew that those answers were not okay for my son and for me. So after that, after being turned away from the emergency physician, I got in contact with a geneticist at the U of A that I had contact for. And I sent her pictures of the bump on his head. And in that time, I had been feeling his head, making sure that there was nothing else. And I felt a little bump on the back of his head and another one on the side. And to the naked eye, if someone saw him, you wouldn't actually see those bumps. You would really have to feel around and feel his skull to notice the difference. So I took pictures of everything. I sent it to the geneticist over email and she called me within 9 minutes.
My gosh.
She said, "You need to come in now and we need to do testing right away." So we packed my son up and my other newborn at the time and we headed to the local hospital. They specialize in pediatric medicine. And so we started with just simple tests of ultrasound. And then after an ultrasound, we went to a CT and then we did blood work and we did an MRI. We did all the things within a day and it was deemed as a tumor. And so that was a little bit of a sense of relief for me because I felt like, okay, I'm not going crazy here. What I am thinking it is, it is. It's true. And we met with oncology and genetics and neuro, and they decided that because the tumor that was on the side of his head was growing so fast that they would have to remove it ASAP because they fear that it would head right towards his brain and yeah, it would be fatal. So within us going to the hospital and having his emergency neurosurgery, it was within 3 days. He went into surgery. The tumor was taken out as well as a big portion of his skull because the tumor actually was on his skull. they had to take it all out. So he had that, and his skull got replaced with a plastic piece. And recovery was pretty good. He did really well, even after, gosh, I'm trying to think, 12 hours after the neurosurgery, which actually ended up being about 6 to 7 hours in the surgery. He was running up and down the hallways, and he was doing so well. So basically what they were trying to figure out was what type of cancer it was, because neuro thought it was one cancer and oncology thought it was another. So they really needed to send it into pathology to figure that out. So that usually takes about 9 days, but they sped it up for us just of the severity of what he was going through.
Okay, Rebecca, pause. I know you are recapping details of what happened, and it's easy to just to talk about them in a matter of fact way. I need to know what you were feeling at this time. Your 2-year-old is in surgery. You're told that he has tumors on his brain or on his head, and they're cancerous. As a mom, how are you processing this?
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I had time to process, really. I think just because I also was postpartum with our third little guy, and I went into fight or flight mode. I went for it. I was like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to have surgery. I'm a very matter of fact person. So I was like, we're going to have surgery. We're going to figure out what it is. We're going to do the chemo, and he's going to be all right. And I had to maintain that attitude, because if I didn't, I knew that I would crumble. So yeah, the feelings were they were all over the place. Like, why us? How could this happen to Levi? I think as a parent, you never think that your child is going to get cancer. You don't. Like, it never crossed my mind one time. And when he was diagnosed, seeing other families in the oncology clinic, it blew my mind. It was an area that I never thought of before, but there are so many kids that are dealing with cancer and are fighting it. And it opened my eyes to a whole different world.
So from there, you're ready to fight. What did the doctors tell you? What did the road ahead look like?
The road ahead was pretty tough. So he was diagnosed with Langerhans cell histiocytosis, which is a pretty rare histiocytic disease. It is deemed as a cancer. They don't really know a lot about it. So all they knew was that it was attacking his skeletal system. He had tumors on his head. He had a tumor on his hip, on his knee. And they couldn't just, the way you deal with tumors, you don't just try to take each of them out through surgery. You attack it with chemotherapy. So he was placed on chemotherapy right away, right when we found out about the LCH. And we did 12 weeks of chemotherapy combined with steroids, which is really hard for a 2-year-old to be on steroids, a really high dose of steroids. And he was not doing super well.
And what do you mean when you say a 2-year-old on a high dose of steroids, it's hard on them? Explain what that means.
Oh man, I try to block that from my memory. It feels like it was so long ago, but he was very angry. He was very irrational. He just had this immense strength, which I know people, you know, when you think of steroids and roid monkeys, that's essentially what it is. 2-year-olds are really tough to deal with in general. You know, you hear of the terrible twos, but a kid that is getting drugs in his system, chemotherapy, and then steroids on top, it is next level. Just hysterical, really angry, crying a lot, and it would stay in his system for a while. So that was really tough, especially having a newborn baby as well, and then a 6-year-old at the time. So
how are you holding it together? Or are you still in fight or flight mode here? Did you
right
give
now?
Yourself at that time when he's going through this treatment, did you give yourself space to feel?
I couldn't give myself space to feel because of the severity of the situation. I really just had to go through day to day. I couldn't think of what was ahead. I couldn't be sad in the moment. I just had to do. And I don't think it really hit me until we found out that the chemotherapy wasn't working. And that was really tough. I had this, again, gut feeling, this intuition that in his first round of chemotherapy that it wasn't working. because he started to display symptoms that he had previous to his diagnosis. So I met with his team and I told them, I don't think it's working. I think we need to do a PET scan to see what's going on within his body. And his oncologist assured me that the symptoms he was displaying was probably just because of the chemotherapy. They were just side effects of the chemotherapy. But again, I'm pretty persistent and I wasn't okay with that answer. So I finally convinced them to do another PET scan. And he had the scan and it was revealed that 7 more tumors were on his body after that first round of chemotherapy. So we knew that the chemotherapy obviously wasn't working because his body was still growing tumors and he had pain from the tumors and he had pain from the chemotherapy and he was really sick and it wasn't working. So with LCH, you can get tested for a genetic mutation within that tumor. So that was the next step. So he got tested for this mutation and he tested positive for it, which was a little bit of a relief as well, because then we knew he could try a drug that we needed to get approved for. So he did get approved to use this drug, and this drug kids normally aren't on. It's used for adults with skin cancer. And so we were approved to use it, but we were only allowed to use it for a year because they didn't know the long-term neurological deficits that could occur if he was on it for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we committed to trying it out and we had scans every 6 weeks to see if it was actually working. So this drug was a game changer for him. He was doing so well on it. The tumors were going away. We started getting clear PET scans. He could live somewhat of a normal life. He was going to preschool. He was doing all the things. The only real side effect he had was that he was so susceptible to the sun to the extreme. And the oncologist had warned us about this, but she didn't even really know how his body was going to respond. So it was really trial and error for him. So when he was outside, no matter the weather, even in the winter, he had to wear gloves, he had to wear hats, sunglasses, long socks if he was wearing shorts, full sleeves, sunscreen. Oh my gosh. It was very intense. And the first couple of weeks, he was playing in a water table outside. And we took his gloves off for, I think, about 8 minutes, not even that long. And he ended up getting third-degree burns on his hands.
Oh, and gosh.
I felt so guilty because I'm taking him in now back to Emerge and explaining to them, you know, the drug that he's on. Not a lot of people know about LCH. A lot of medical professionals have never seen it. And so, yeah, I felt quite guilty. But his oncologist assured me that she had no idea either that he would respond this way.
So during this journey and he's on this, you know, cancer drug and taking this chemotherapy, how are you keeping life together? You have 2 other children, you're postpartum, your husband, like, how are you pulling this off? Give us some perspective from that angle as a mother.
Oh gosh, it was a lot. And I really can thank my community and the people that we surround ourselves with and that rally with us that have helped us out in the past 2 years plus. I also started school at that time.
Okay. I'm a little... So let's dig into that. When you say started school, so everybody brace for this. This is what's so incredible about the story. So you're dealing with your son's cancer, 2 others, you have a newborn, and was it 1 in kindergarten?
Yes.
Is that right? And yeah. You suddenly have another gut feeling of something you needed to do. What was that, Rebecca?
Yeah. So I had a gut feeling of applying to medical school. And it's something that I had been thinking about for a little bit, but never really felt the push, or I didn't really think that I could do it, right? I think that we have this idea in our head that becoming a physician is hard, and it is hard, and that not the average person can do it. So I had these lies in my head saying, like, there's no way you can do it. Like, you have a degree, but cool. You can't do more. But I just felt this push to want to try. I've always been a high achiever in my life. You know, in high school, I was the straight A student and the captain of this team and involved in, you know, involved in everything. And so I've always set goals that seem impossible to most people just to see if I can do it. And so I had this gut feeling that I needed to apply to medical school. However, I was out of university for already 10 years. And so to get my mind back into schooling again, I decided to start another undergraduate degree at that time in science. And so I started that, and it needed to be full time because I needed to really up my GPA. And so I started that while Levi was on that drug. And in a way, the schooling really helped me cope with things. It was a little bit of a distractor. It was a time for me. I love school. I love writing papers. And I know that sounds crazy to most people, but it was a way for me to focus on me at a time and to see achievement in my mm-hmm. life rather than always being pushed down with things with Levi. And so, yeah, I'm still going with that. I'm finishing my second year and I'm applying to medical school next year. I was supposed to apply this year, but Levi had recurrence occur in July.
Okay. So take us there.
Yeah. So Levi was on the inhibitor treatment for a year, and because he wasn't able to go on beyond a year, they decided to take him off the treatment altogether because he had had so many clear scans and he was doing so well. They thought to themselves, well, let's see what his body does without anything. So we took him off it and he was doing so well for 4 months. We were even able to go on vacation back home and enjoy the summer and have fun as a family and just be normal. And it was so refreshing. And then on vacation, he started displaying symptoms again, but I tried to kind of push it away out of my head because I really wanted to enjoy that vacation because mm-hmm. we hadn't had a vacation in so long. And so once we got home, we knew we were going to have a normal scan, just like 6 weeks prior. So we went into a scan and came out of it, and he was growing many more tumors this time. And this time the cancer not only went from his skeletal system, it also surrounded his thymus and there was skin involvement. So it went from a single system cancer to a multi-system cancer. And that's scarier and more aggressive. So that just happened a couple months ago. And I was planning on applying to medical school in September. And so I had to put that on hold. And, you know, that was disappointing. I definitely had my juvenile moment of, what about me? I've been working so hard. It's my turn. I want to apply. But I've been really assured just in the past couple of months that it's okay. Even though I am a mature student, I still have time. I can still apply. And I've been given so many opportunities along the way, even these past few months, to really just give myself more experience academically and to volunteer more. And I know that it's the right decision. And because of the type of treatment he is on now, it's way harder than before. So it's way more aggressive and we're at the hospital a lot more.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So where is he at in his treatment and like, how is his body responding?
So he was placed on a year treatment. He does 5 days in a row of chemotherapy every day straight. And then he gets 3 weeks off to recover. And the chemotherapy is brutal. He gets really sick. he's just in a lot of pain. And so it's really hard as a parent to see that. And I think before, because he was younger, he was just two, he wasn't able to verbalize things. He wasn't able to verbalize his pain, or if he was feeling sick, I would just have to interpret it myself. Now he can verbalize it. And that's hard as a parent, right? Just to, you know, mommy, I feel sick. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I have a headache. I have back pain, right? So seeing it, before I was in that fight or flight, but I think now because I've processed things, it hits me a little bit deeper now. And I wish I could, you know, be in his place and take that pain away. So I just try my best to be who he needs me to be in those moments when we're at the hospital.
What is that? What does he need you to do and be at those moments? Take us there. Because if we've never walked this journey, it's hard to even like put yourself in your shoes.
Yeah. I just always try to think of what I would want if I had cancer. And I try to be as consistent for him. I try to be kind and have compassion and to advocate for him and to really just treat him like he's a normal kid, because he is. He just has different things going on in his life. And I try to bring joy to our sessions because the days are really long. We're there 6 to 8 hours a day and he's hooked up and he can't leave his bed. And so I tried to bring innovative games to him and, you know, have lunches with him and we chat and we cuddle together. And I just try to be who I think that he would want me to be. And it's been working so far. And it's that empathy side, right? I've definitely changed and become more empathetic in the past few years with life circumstances. And so, yeah, just really reaching into that empathetic side of me, because sometimes, you know, as a parent, you can think, man, why is this happening to me? I wish I could just move on with my life. And I know this is just a season. And so I will be the best for him that he needs, but it's exhausting. And I'm exhausted when I get home from the hospital. It feels like I've run a marathon, and I can say that because I have run a marathon and I've done multiple races and I'm an athlete and I bike and I push my body to the limits. And spending days on end at the hospital, being consistent for your child, is more exhausting than all those things that I've done physically.
So you've put your studies on hold to focus on him, have you?
No, I'm still in school. I'm still doing my undergraduate degree. And I do that when we're at the hospital and in the evenings. During the day when he's not at the hospital, I'll study and write papers for a couple hours. And yeah, it's my thing. It's what I love to do. So I'm continuing to do that so that I can apply next year.
Okay, Rebecca, I need to ask this question because, you know, I lost my mom and my dad to cancer. I know I'm familiar with the disease. Are there ever days, like, you're so strong when you talk about this, but are there ever days that fear can overwhelm you?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that I'm strong, because I know that I am, but I'm not going to lie, have really bad days and I'm not strong some days. And I would probably say right now, more than ever, we have more bad days than good days. And so I think about Levi dying, and that's hard to say. And it's something that I've had to work out with my psychologist and be okay with. But I know that if I resonate on those thoughts, I can't be what he needs me to be. Mm-hmm. So Levi doesn't need me to think that he's going to die. He needs me to think that he's going to live and that he's going to fight this cancer and he's going to beat it. And I always think, like, I can't have two contradicting things in my mind. I can't think that he's going to die and then try to be positive for him and cheer for him. I need to have one thought in my mind. And for me, it's that he's going to live and that he's going to fight and he's going to thrive and that he's going to have this story. You know, in 10 years from now, he's going to say that he fought and he won and he beat this cancer.
Mm-hmm. So your perspective and your learnings and your voice through this is so, so powerful. And I wanted to talk about that because you are so strong. And you said a little bit earlier, you can't dwell on the fact of like, why him? And I want to dig into that a little bit because, you know, it was probably some 25 years ago when I took my 30 years ago, my first ever tour of the Stollery Children's Hospital, Daryl McIntyre and I were doing telethons back then. And I will never, ever forget to this day. I still reflect on it, walking through the kids' cancer ward. And seeing, you know, 5 and 6 year old or 10 year olds that are bald and they're in there and they're playing. And it crushed me. Like I once I got out of there, I bawled like a baby. And I just thought how unfair life was to them, that like, how does Levi get a cancer like this? Yeah. The kids are pure. They haven't done anything wrong. How does this happen? Do you have any answers in that regard? And how do you process that? Because I know for me, I'm going to be honest, I think I would have a lot of anger. It would. At the universe, yeah. At God, I don't know who I'd be angry at, but I think it's just a natural human reaction. How are you dealing with that?
Yeah, that's a hard one because sometimes I question the capacity at which I've been given. And I feel like I've reached my quota. You know, I'm like, I'm done. Like, I can't have any more bad things happen to me. You know, I only have so much capacity that I can take. And I know that, you know, that there's quote that, you know, bad things happen to good people, or bad things happen to people that are strong because they can take it for the rest of us. And I really hate quotes like that because I'm like, I don't want to be strong. I don't want to be these things. But I also don't wish it upon anybody else. So if it means that Levi has to go through it, I know that I can help him through it because I look at us and him and what he's going through and our family. And I don't know if anyone else could do what we're doing. And we've really worked hard at communication and loving each other and really resonating on the fact that we can be together, because there's some families that if they live out of town, they have to travel to the hospital and spend months on end in a different city than their other kids. And the fact that we're 20 minutes away is a true blessing for us. So I do think of those why sometimes, but I don't have the answers. I don't have the reasons why. All I can think of is that we have to keep going and we have to keep fighting, because that's the only way I can get through. And if I think about those whys, it makes me angry and it makes me bitter inside. And I start resenting people and I'm like, it's not my friend's fault. It's not my family's fault. It's not anyone's fault. It is what it is. And like you said, going through that cancer ward, it's really eye-opening. It's heartbreaking. And I walk in and I take a deep breath every single day and we conquer through it and we try to make the best of it. It's like being in a club that you don't want to be in, but you have to be in. Mm-hmm. So we try to make the best of it and we, you know, spark conversation and the kids will play if they're able to, and they're not super immunocompromised at the time. And they make it really fun for the kids too. There's lots of toys and games and yeah. And us parents, we can connect as well, which has been really good as well. And I've been able to actually take what I'm, you know, Levi's experience and be part of the hospital through volunteering. And I'm part of the patient and family council as an advisor, because I do have this strong sense of advocacy within me. Mm-hmm. And so being able to be a part of things that are going on in the hospital has been really healing for me, to be able to advocate for families that don't have that voice. And I've been doing that for over a year now. And it's been so cool because I've been able to be a part of some pretty amazing initiatives within the hospital and within the province wide as well.
Your voice in this journey needs to be heard. And I'm so glad to hear that you are doing that for you and for your family and really for the benefit of others, because you're living it. And this isn't the first time you've lived it, because back in 2016, life handed you a pretty raw deal as well.
Yeah, it did. So we were pregnant with our second child. And it was kind of, this process was really the start of my journey to self-discovery and really evolving as a human being. So I had had a normal pregnancy and I am really active. And so I felt really good during it and, you know, took my prenatal vitamins and everything was going well. I had had a slight umbilical hernia. And so I went in for an early ultrasound and everything seemed to be okay. So, you know, went along my way and went in for my 20-week ultrasound later than normal because I had just had one. And during that ultrasound, the tech actually turned the TV off. And I knew when you turn the TV off, something is wrong. Mm-hmm. So she just said, you know, I'll be back in a second. And that second felt like eternity. And the doctor came in and said, you know, we're going to refer you to the perinatal clinic because we just think there might be a few things off and we just want to make sure that everything's okay. Just, you know, for that second opinion. And so I waited a 10 days, those agonizing 10 days to be referred, which was really hard because your mind goes many places. Mm-hmm. So we went to the perinatal clinic and had many ultrasounds and genetic appointments and an amniocentesis and a CT. And it was deemed that our baby had multiple genetic anomalies and that he wasn't going to survive the pregnancy or the birth. And yeah, that's stung. And it still affects me to this day, obviously, right? Because he's a member of our family and I had never had something bad happen to me yet. I had a really good upbringing, a really good childhood, had never experienced loss before. So having this in my mid-20s was really difficult. So I gave birth to him and holding your dead child really changes you. It's this unexplainable shift in your perspective where nothing else really matters. And we were able to hold him and hang out with him for many hours. And then as part of the healing process, we buried him and we still celebrate his life to this day. And he's a part of our family and he will always be remembered and the kids always talk about him. And yeah, that journey was really hard, but in hindsight, I look back at that and that really prepared me for what Levi is going through because grief is a hard thing. And I find when there's death and loss in that sense, it's so permanent that you have to learn how to cope with that permanent state. And the further you get from it, you can kind of not push it away, but it gets a little bit easier because you learn these coping strategies, right? For me, I cope with exercise. I'll go on my bike and ride for 3 hours or I'll go for a run. Or if I really need to go visit his gravesite, I'll do that and remember what happened and what his life could look like. And it's a different type of grief. Whereas with Levi, you're living a weird grief every single day at this loss of what his life should look like, because he should be going to preschool and being a normal kid and not be immune compromised and go to birthday parties and do all the things that 4 or 5 year olds need to do to be kids. And he can't do that. And so processing Jude's death is currently helping me with Levi's situation. And it also sparked this drive to want to know more in genetics and pathology and disease. And so that's kind of the sparking of the academic side of me that I knew that I wanted to go into something medical. I just didn't know what it looked like. So it's kind of been brewing in me over the last 5 years. And then when Levi was diagnosed, then I just was like, light bulb, yeah, this is it. And for me, it's a little bit unexplainable. It's like this drive that I want to do this and I could bring such an interesting perspective to mm-hmm. patients and to the hospital setting, because I know for me, I've had good physicians. I've had great physicians. I've had not so good physicians. And I think that anyone can be a physician if you really put your mind to it. But for someone to be a great physician, you have to bring that empathetic perspective. And because of my situations, because of losing Jude and with Levi's diagnosis, I can bring that parental perspective. And so it kind of just clicked for me when Levi was diagnosed that, you know what, I think this is it. And I think about it and it's not up to me whether or not I get into medical school or not, but I can do all the things along the way. I can, you know, maintain that 4.0. Mm-hmm. I can do all my MCAT. I can do all the volunteering and do research, but in the end, it's someone else's decision. But I know that I'm going to hold the goal with arms wide open. And if I'm led into a different opportunity, I will do that as well. So it's interesting being a mature student because you have your sights on something, but it's open. It's not like, I'm not going to be devastated if it doesn't happen, but I hope that it does. And I hope that I can bring that advocacy that I had and have because of losing Jude and because of Levi's situation for those parents that are really fighting for their children.
And you're already doing that. You're doing that by sharing your story and sharing your journey and the advocacy, you know, in the hospital. I want to close with this because it is one of the things that I love and respect about you is that somehow through this whole journey, you're managing to find the joy. You're, you know, and I need to know how. I need you to teach us how in those most challenging moments when you're on hour number 8 in the hospital with Levi, how, what do we need to learn from you?
Wow. How do I find the joy? I find the joy knowing that Levi is going to be okay. I find the joy in the small things, you know, seeing him laugh at the hospital or show me something on the iPad that he's done. I find the joy in when he comes home from a day of chemotherapy. He might have been really sick at the hospital and been throwing up a lot, but then he just pulls up his socks and he goes, plays outside in the snow with his other siblings when a lot of people wouldn't do that. So it's just finding the joy in those small little moments, because right now the things are really hard, but seeing those small things of Levi playing or him and his sister, Taya, you know, pretending to be puppies or his little brother, Parker, fighting with him. You know, it's those small things that can add up to, you know, bring a smile to my face. So, and I also think about what my life is going to be, and that brings me joy as well. I know that once we're out of this and Levi's doing so well, then I can start pursuing my dreams. And knowing that in the pursuit of my dreams and my career goals, that will make me a happy person. And to be a happy person means that I am then a happy and good wife, and I am a good mom, and I'm a great friend, and I'm an amazing member of my community, and I can give more. So seeing the future makes me joyful, and I try not to resonate on the past because that does bring me sadness, as mm-hmm. you saw with my tears. But that the future pushes me forward, knowing that there is joy on the other side of all of this. And I just have to keep going. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but I will keep pushing towards that.
Rebecca, your gift and your perspective and your advocacy is a gift to all of us. And I can say this, I know your community is embracing you. I wrap my arms around you virtually from a distance. And I thank you for the brave and incredible and inspirational way that you stepped into the inner circle. Please come visit us and let us know how Levi is doing. We send him love and light in his journey. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Take care.
I want to end today by extending my gratitude to you for listening. You know, time is our most precious commodity. We don't have enough of it most days. So I am so grateful that you shared some of your precious time with me. Thank you so much. For show notes and links to our guests and everything we talked about today, you can head to my website, carriedoll.co. That is CARRIEDOLL.CO. Once you're there, you can find links to Instagram and Facebook. You can sign up for my newsletters and get information on my public speaking courses. I want to empower women and people everywhere to use their voice, to invest in themselves, and to be comfortable anytime, anywhere, giving a powerful, unforgettable speech. Come with me. Join the movement of the inner circle. Let's go on this journey together.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.